Now, 6 o'clock, call the work session to order. First order of business, pledge allegiance, followed by a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. Next, planning director comment.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any comments at this time. I would like to note that this is Mr. Cuthier's last meeting with us. She's accepted a position with the state. She will start work there next week, and we've enjoyed having her the past 2.5 years.
So we're going to miss you. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Who are you going with?
DPOR.
Close to home.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next item on our work session is public comment section. Anyone wishing to come forward to speak on any item, please come forward, state your name and address. You will be limited to 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we'll end the public comment section. We're going to go right into our work session. First item on the work session is Columbia Rental Inspection District. Mr. Rob.
Okay, this is just a very general presentation. So this map, you should recall seeing this when the county rezoned property in Columbia back in 2017. This is the map that showed the proposed zoning for the area. And so if you were to go into the GIS today, this is what you would see. So now the area that was formerly the town of Columbia has county zoning. So the code on the screen, if you recall, the county building official came to a previous meeting and gave a presentation about unsafe structures, and this is one of the codes that he went over. And there has been discussion, I thought, about adopting a rental inspection district for the Columbia area as an additional tool of enforcement that the county could use. So on the screen, Mr. Zoll was a little bit more of an expert about this than I am, but note on the screen, it talks about that the rental inspection district is based upon a finding by the local government body that there is a need to protect the public health, safety, and welfare of the occupants of the dwelling units inside the designated rental inspection district. The residential rental dwelling units within the designated rental inspection district are either blighted or in the process of deteriorating. So those two that are highlighted on the screen in the under number two are just some of the points that that were the parts of Columbia that were discussed in regards to Columbia. So staff has kind of tossed around what a boundary for Columbia, if the county were to start this district. This is what staff is recommending would be the boundary. It's basically everything you saw on the zoning map, except that it excludes parcels south of the railroad tracks. And the reason for that is the parcels south of the railroad tracks are undeveloped, to our knowledge. It's not there. But other than that, it just includes everything else within the town limits. So, you've seen that tonight. We just wanted to open that up for discussion and see if you have any additional input. Direction to go.
Do you have any input from the people who live in Columbia?
Has there been any comment from the Columbia Task Force?
They have been supportive as far as wanting a more enforcement, but this particular proposal has not been brought to them. So they have not seen this yet.
Okay.
They talked about it briefly at the last CARE meeting, focused more on the other one. There was a brief mention of it. Were you there?
Mm-hmm.
about it. Yeah, there was a brief mention of it, and I think.
We didn't talk about these boundaries.
No, not the boundaries.
We talked about the rental inspection district.
But the code.
And the other potential changes.
Not the boundaries.
The task force is definitely in favor of some action. They didn't talk about boundaries specifically.
There's not much to argue about those boundaries. I guess you could make them smaller. I think if you made them bigger, there's nothing to encompass if you made them bigger, so.
May I ask a question? Please forgive me for not knowing already, but why is there a need to make a boundary? Is there not a rental inspection that applies to the whole county?
No.
Yeah, there could be.
There could be, yes.
There could be, but you...
I think the building official would tell you, because he told Planning Commission before, that he simply doesn't have the resources to enforce that. And whether he would have the resources to enforce this is a question, but I think he thinks so. So this is crawling before you walk.
It's not a foregone conclusion that this would be effective, but if you did this, you could figure out if it was going to be an effective tool that you could then figure out if you had the same level of...
There are certainly a couple of trailer parks in the community that need rental inspections on, too, that are in horrific condition. But it's hard to do everything at once.
Well, my thinking is that maybe we can try this in this particular area to start with and see how well it works, and if it works well enough, maybe we could expand it and have some other inspection districts. Now, I also mentioned to Mr. Robinson earlier, there's a new tool that the state just put into effect. It's ordinance 15.2-907, which is a removal and repair ordinance that can apply if there's any criminal activity on a property or any type of sexual activity, drug type of activity or something, and then you do an investigation and you can send a certified letter and you can order repair or removal of that property.
That's not a new statute. It's
Did they revise it or something? I just saw it. And it was listed under new.
There's a series of statutes in around 900 that all deal with the same subject. We already have the section about which term is which, but I think it's the deteriorated buildings or whatever it is. We have that. There are several others that are more specialized, like what you're talking about. As a practical matter, what that amounts to is it's a statutory formulation for public nuisances, because public nuisances are generally a commission of crimes that have an impact on the public. And that's what you're talking about, is bawdy houses and drug dealers and things like that. As I recall, the board elected not to adopt that when they did the other one, just because that seemed to be a more specialized problem. Of course, you obviously have the enforcement of the criminal law generally. Not to say you couldn't do it, you certainly can. Question is how much do you want to do and how much can you afford to do?
And that's the balance as a staff, how effectively can we enforce
it? It seems like a pretty simple type of thing, but I just wouldn't mention that, because I was looking at all the new or revised ordinances for zoning and so forth like that, and I happened to see this, and because I was actually looking at the small cell ordinance and stuff like that. So.
Yeah, I think what you'd find is it's more complicated than you think it is. Because
I know you have to send a certified letter and so forth.
Well, the problem is, let's say you go down there and you see a drug deal going down. That's not what you need to prove. You need to prove that, you know, this is a place where the drug dealers hang out.
I just thought they would take a look at it, so that was just my suggestion.
I think the board has actually considered that, my memory was right. And there are several other categories that could do that with.
So they've somewhat revised it, so I didn't.
Yeah, I think they did revise it, but I don't remember what the revision is. But this, these statutes are, in this section, are, they go from the most general to the more specific, and that's one of the more specific ones.
But as far as the, this rental inspection district thing, is it, I think we need to establish the exact boundaries for this, like you were discussing earlier. And I think that this could be a place that we actually try and then to see if after it was tried in this area, whether it could be expanded, you know, how much resources it takes, whether it's worth it or anything to expand it to other areas.
It's really a unique situation. We have an unincorporated former town that has issues. So if there's a test case for this in a rural county, it would be this area.
Well, that's right. And one of the big advantages, if you're going to do this, I think Columbia is the place to do it. Number one, it's a target-rich environment. And the other thing is you don't have to worry about boundaries because the Columbia boundaries have been surveyed, and they're you know, it's as simple as any other place around to establish the boundary of the district. It just made the district contemporaneous or coextensive with the former town limits. Now, let me say a couple things that I think you need to bear in mind while you're talking about this. I see two caveats to this. Whether you want to do it is, you know, that's, I'm not going to tell you whether you should do it or not. But I think there's two caveats that you need to consider. One is you should not do this unless you're prepared to do it on a regular and fairly rigorous basis. Because this is the kind of ordinance that if you don't enforce it regularly, you get accused of selective enforcement. And that's going to impair the utility of it and its enforceability. So if you do this, be prepared to spend some money on it, because it will cost that. The second thing is beware of the unintended consequences, because the easy way for the landlord to avoid the impact of this is simply to evict the tenants. And
that's been brought up. The need for a solution before you start this process.
I know it has, and you know, these people, the people that would be affected by this, they're living in a bad situation. You don't want to make it worse.
So if you enforced it and you went to the person that owned the property and said you have to do these certain things, if he evicted that person, would he be required to do these repairs before he could bring in another tenant?
Well, theoretically, yes.
Legally,
can
yes.
You expound?
But he could still do it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. You're not dealing with top-end landlords.
Anymore. I know exactly what we're dealing with. So.
We wouldn't need this if we were.
So, well, I'm not trying to talk you out of it. That's up to you all. But I just don't want you to get caught up with unintended consequences that you didn't foresee.
Well, if we did put it into effect and we found out it had consequences that more than we expected, could we repeal it?
In theory. The problem with that is there's a phrase that I learned when I took an econ class in college, and they're like ordinances are like prices, regulations are like prices. They're sticky downward. That is to say, it's easier to adopt them than it is to repeal them. So, yes, you can always repeal it. The question is, are you going to? Because there would certainly be pressure not to repeal it if people think it's a good idea.
My question is, are we, these people that rent these properties, are we putting their health and their safety at risk by not doing something like this?
Their health and safety is probably at risk. I mean, by hypothesis, it is.
And I think I mentioned this the last time. Would we rather have an ordinance like this, or would we rather go down and find five dead bodies or something like that by a person storing gallons of gasoline? What I understood it one time, they didn't have to do an inspection, and in one apartment, they found like 12, 15 milk jugs filled with gas inside the apartment. And they, at the same time, the electrical system was in shreds.
Probably kerosene, but still dangerous.
So looking at the ordinance, if you look at section B3, what's to prevent someone bringing up units outside that district? Because B3 allows it to be, the ordinance to be applied outside the district if you can meet certain criteria.
I haven't looked at it in that kind of detail.
That could cause mission creep if someone could do that.
Mission creep is what I've really talked about.
Could you explain that a little bit more?
It just reads, an individual residential rental dwelling unit outside of a designated rental inspection district is made subject to the rental inspection ordinance based upon a separate finding for each individual dwelling unit by a local government body, and then it lays out the requirements.
So
just
what
like
you, the answer is what you do is, let's just say the Board of Supervisors makes a finding that the necessary findings that health, safety, welfare, et cetera, and limits it to the town of Columbia, the former town of Columbia. And I think what Mr. Blank Marcino is talking about is somebody comes in and says, I know a place where there's a house that's, you know, at least equally dangerous with these. Board, please make the same finding that you made with that on this other.
So that's what limits it.
I'm sorry?
That's what limits it. The board has to pass. So the board has to agree to enforce it on that property.
That's right.
And what about the last few lines of that? What's up there right now?
What do you mean the last? You
know,
the black language on two?
Yeah.
That's the alternative finding that the board has to make. It makes.
But the part that says nothing in this section to be construed to authorize one or more locally wide inspection districts and a local governing body shall limit the boundaries of the proposed rental inspection district to such areas of the locality that meet the criteria set out in the subsection.
Well,
so could they still limit it? They would not have to do what Mr. Lagosina is saying?
They wouldn't have to.
Yeah, but I think if someone will bring a residence outside that district that's of equal danger, and we didn't do something, you know, what's the consequences of that?
People's health, safety, and welfare would be potentially an impact.
Could I ask another question then? If I was the landlord in that district, I would be thinking they're singling me out, that I could argue that there was some prejudice in singling this small district out as discriminating against me as a landlord.
That's what I was talking about when I said selective enforcement.
But it's a state ordinance all we doing is going by what is already.
The latest question is a legitimate question. It doesn't mean that you can't do it.
Yeah.
The statute authorizes you to do it if the board makes the appropriate findings.
Sure. As the county administrator and the head of the CARE task force, can I address this, please?
Sure.
Thanks. So the answers are never going to end. We're going to have people that are going to say, well, how about this place? Or how about that place? The question is, when is someone going to do something about an issue that has been sweltering for weeks, months, years, decades in the same place, and we have no enforcement authority to do anything about it? Are there other places? Absolutely. And will we have to apply it to some other place sometime? Maybe. But we can either do nothing now and let the situation to continue, or take the risk of a landlord booting somebody out and us having to help find housing for them. There is never, ever going to be a time when this body or the Board of Supervisors or the community at large can stop asking questions about it, because there's always going to be one more question. So what? That's how ordinances work. There's an answer, there's a question on every ordinance we have. There's always a but, there's always a maybe, but there's a how about this or how about that. That shouldn't stop you from putting appropriate and reasonable ordinances in effect. If this one is appropriate, that you deem appropriate, make that recommendation to the Board of Supervisors. They can look at it and see. It can apply to a small area that we know and have lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of complaints in the 7 years I've been here. I've reported those facilities many, many, many times. And I've not done that for one other rental facility in this county in 7 years. And why haven't I? Because I haven't had any complaints. This is a known issue, a known area, a known problem, and maybe this is the place to start. And maybe, as Mr. Payne says, it's going to eat us alive. It's going to be too big to handle. Well, then back off down on it. But we're talking about human beings that live in these facilities that we've not been able to grab a hold of. You now have the authority to do that because you're the county that has authority over that area because it's no longer a town. But sitting around and waiting for this to get better on its own hasn't happened in the last 4 or 5 decades. So I expect it's not going to unless we do something about it. And there's always going to be another but.
Let me say one thing about that. I have to disagree with Mr. Nichols has said, and that is I don't view this as an either-or prospect. This is not you do this or you don't do anything. Just to give you a little history, the town of Columbia, when it was a town, and when it was a little more active than we're used to seeing in the past few years, recognized that they had a problem with, I don't want to use technical words like blighted and deteriorated, housing it was, let's say, obviously substandard. And one of the things they did was adopt the basic ordinance. The ordinance, and I don't have the statute in front of me, but it's the one, it's the basic one that if the governing body determines that a building is a danger to health, safety, and welfare, they can order it secured or removed. And that's what we have now. That's what the county has now. The town adopted such an ordinance, and I know because I wrote it, and it was probably 25 years ago, quite a while ago. And there was a time when the town actually enforced that ordinance. And there were a number of buildings that were either secured or torn down to accommodate that. That's another way to address this problem. Now, it's a more drastic problem. That's a more either-or proposition. But we're not without any remedy at all. You've got that remedy now on the books. The question is whether you want to have this one. And that whether you want to do that is entirely up to you and the board. I'm not trying to impose my opinion on it. I'm not expressing it. But this is a little bit different proposition. And it certainly has a salutary purpose. So the question is whether you want to try it. I would expect that if you do try it, it's going to be hard to get rid of it. So I just want you to get into this with your eyes open if you want to do it.
I think we should maybe just continue to do what we've always done and ignore it. Because that's what's been happening for the last 50 years. The current ordinance, as Mr. Payne is talking about, absolutely is enforceable, except it's for structures that are failing or going to fall over. We don't have the authority to go into the five structures that I know of down there that are physically failing. I can't enforce that ordinance on those structures. I can't get the health department to do any enforcement on it. I can't get the social services department to do any enforcement. But a rental inspection district actually ramps up the bidding on it. And again, we can either continue to let it be as is, it's been like that for decades, or we can do something about it now that the county has authority to.
So my question becomes something on the other side of that. You know, we've talked about people losing their homes and the owner will or will not do all the things they need to do once they've evicted people. My question would be, if we did all of this and before we repealed and people got put out, where do we stand on holding that owner accountable before someone else can live there? I mean, because that ultimately is where the responsibility lies.
That's the easiest part of the enforcement. If we have a rental inspection district and the structure is not able to accommodate renters legally based on this ordinance, and those renters are moved out, and we certainly would be on the hook to help find human beings an alternative place to live. Not on our dime, not on the county's. We're not going to go build housing because we don't manage housing, but there are lots of resources that can help with those things. I'd much rather face that problem than continue to let people live in the hovels that they live in. They may go to another hovel someplace else, but I may not have to worry about that because it may not be in my county. But having the owner responsible for upping the game and improving the habitability of that structure before he re-rents it is an easy enforcement.
Because that's what I would want to know. I remember last time we spoke and you talked about assisting with helping people find places. You know, I was very clear about what we do in terms of housing. But I do believe that you have to start somewhere. But I don't want it to be folks are penalized and then we're still sitting there, well, there's nothing we can do about it because this place has been here 50 years and now we're trying to sort through for 6 more months holding somebody accountable for the reason why they rented and evicted somebody because they're not following the rules of the county. That would be what my opinion.
What concerns me is the fact that when the building inspector came here before, he says he needs a tool. And I think he is concerned about the health, safety, and welfare of those people. Would you rather them live in that type of environment, and one day we've got to call the sheriff or the EMS or anybody else down there because people are dead or almost dead? That's my concern, you know. From what I understand and from what I've been hearing for years, that the safety stuff of this, especially electrical and things like that, are very bad. So,
Mr. Nichols, are the buildings where people aren't renting but just living there, squatters?
No, not that we know. The 5 buildings that are owned by the same owner, that we know are rentals, and the owner might say they're actually rent to own. And I'm not sure if there's a legal distinction there or not, but a couple of me says they're rent to own. they're all owned by the same 1 or 2 property owners, and they're all tenants. Some have been there for many years, some have been there for 2 weeks, and in another 2 weeks somebody else will be there. But mostly cash transactions in most of the cases. You're only required to have a lease a formal lease for the first month. After that, you can go cash transactions. And trying to get the Legal Aid Justice Center or others to try to help with this has been very difficult. We're going to do some town hall meetings in the county to help try to address this on landlord-tenant relations. But there's no reasonable enforcement authority that the county has now that I've seen used since I've been here.
So this particular owner, landlord, do you believe in your heart that he would do anything about it anyway?
I believe he would make them no longer rentals.
That's what I think.
Because he's not going to want to pay the money to fix them. But they're not habitable. And I'll tell you this. If the landlord wanted to fix up those facilities to the degree where they'd probably be up to code if we had internal inspections, they would have to be rebuilt to federal floodplain standards, and nobody's going to spend that money.
Okay.
Well, if they could do it.
If they could do it, even if they could do it, yes.
And wouldn't you, I guess I'm asking you directly, wouldn't you, okay, these are no longer rentals, would that be a win? Would that be a good thing?
An absolute, ecstatic, top-of-the-world win.
I don't disagree.
How many people would be affected? Do you know how many renters there are?
I think there are up to 11 families, and that may mean a family of one or up to a family of four. There are, at varying times, three in one unit, at least two in one other, one in another one, and at least three in the other one. So there's somewhere between 7 and 10, or 7 and 11 families we expect in these facilities. The other two, the other, that's four facilities. The one across the street has a single family, but about 5 to 11, depending on time. Sometimes there are three families in one structure and we know it. Sometimes there's only one.
Do we have a nonprofit? I mean, you and I just went to that home that was rebuilt for the man, and but that took a long time. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, I think he went to live with someone else. Mm-hmm. Do we have enough resources to be able to help those 11 families, or however many people there are, get resituated?
Yes, and not the county, no. The county does not have the resources, the housing, or the or the financial resources to resettle folks, because we don't own any housing. We don't have, like in Charlottesville, they have a residential housing authority. We don't have that in the county.
But have the resources with our nonprofits?
Levanna Louisa Housing Foundation, Habitat for Humanity, CIRCAP, the Southeast Regional something assistance program, can't remember what the C is, Piedmont Housing Alliance, and one more organization. Mr. Robinson and I have been meeting with all those organizations. Last week we met with DEQ, CIRCAP, and Health Department. Before that we met with Piedmont Housing Alliance. Before that we met with the Health Department the first time. And then we had all those agencies at one of the task force meetings to hear this discussion about the problems. The biggest long-term problem in Columbia is sewer, but not just for these houses, but for all the houses. So we're trying to approach all these big problems, but that's the long-term one. But these rental units that are there, I'm not sure that anyone in this room would think they're up to any kind of standard that, and I've lived in lots and lots of third world countries and stayed and been in a lot better than what's in Columbia in those facilities.
Mr. Nichols, in those conversations that you were having with those different entities, did it seem as though one of them were viable to help? If not all four families or 11 people, but if each one took on a family, they could at least get them started where they, and if so, and you may not have this answer
right now, but
some of these individuals may work locally, so if they were even to be able to be put in green or something, they still can't get back to work and those kind of things. Did those conversations revolve around
Most difficult thing is that you've got folks that live in Columbia right now. Many of them don't work because they don't have any ability to get to work. There are no vehicles in front of most of these houses. Sometimes there's one in front, two vehicles that start in front of two different houses. Actually, the one on the north side has family lives there. But most of them don't have access to any other transportation either. There's no jaunt that goes down on a regular basis. There's no services there. There's a mini mart, but that's it. I mean, the nearest gas station is 6 miles towards the east in Goochland County. I'm not even sure, as a matter of fact, I'm more sure that it would be a problem that some of the folks in those rentals would not want any assistance if the owner told them they were going to have to move out in 30 days or 60 days or 45 days or whatever it would be, because he would have a responsibility to give them fair notice. Not that he has done that before, but he would have a responsibility to, and we can enforce that. But I'm not even sure that most of those folks would even want or accept help because they don't want to be on the radar at all. They don't want their names known. They don't want to know people know who they are. They're there specifically because they are under the radar and on a cash basis and don't have to answer to anyone. And it's allowed. So I'm not sure we'd even have to help all the folks. There are some folks that are certainly longer-term tenants in those facilities, in probably the better of the five units. And these are all just single-family homes, that are single-family homes or old stores that have been converted into houses, that we'd want to provide as much assistance as possible.
Piedmont Housing Alliance, Louisiana Louisa Housing Foundation, both will assist with us, but there is no sure answer today, and I can't give you one tomorrow, because if this family's, if this family needs help tonight, I can call social services and they can find a place for them tonight. But for the next 30 days, we have to work through those issues with each one of those families. I just don't know. Anytime there's a there's an immediate vacancy from a house fire or something, there are resources that are brought to bear, but I can't tell you that I've got five apartments lined up that people could afford that they could go into. So it's a difficult conundrum. Can you move somebody out that really doesn't want to be even noticed and move them someplace that they can't afford because they're only paying, I'm not even guessing it, what amount, paying an amount that they can afford there or they can trade or barter for whatever they get to live there because there's a lot of that that reportedly goes on. I don't know. But I know now none of what we're doing is effective on improving the lot and life in those facilities.
So Mr. Payne, and maybe you can answer this question, the fact that you have these families and you say, you all have to move out in the next 2 days. Here's an option for you to, I don't know, Piedmont Housing, whatever those places are, and they refuse, what is that on us if we went with this process right here?
Well, let me answer by saying there's actually, it's not an either or proposition entirely, because there are things that this ordinance would allow you to do that's short of evicting them. It's only, what would guarantee the evictions if the landlord evicted them. And, you know, that's always a possibility, but you might be able to get something short of that. If you got an eviction order either because it was unsafe and violated the terms of the ordinance and they wouldn't leave, we'd have to evict them. We'd have to send a sheriff down there and physically put them out, which I can tell you right now, that would be me doing it, and I'm not looking forward to that. But that's anytime you have an ordinance, one of the questions is enforceability. And again, it's not that you can't enforce it, but you have to be prepared to. So Mr. Nichols is right. This is a very difficult situation. And it has literally existed for, I think it's probably not an exaggeration to say it's existed for centuries. I mean, this town's been here for 200 years, and I have reason to believe, based on my research, that they were having problems like this from the very beginning. I noticed one of the things that Mr. Nichols mentioned was the sewer problem. Because when this town was founded, you didn't have a sewer problem. Because you dug a hole in the backyard and
put it where you dumped in the river.
And you didn't work. But the only way to solve the sewer problem is to have some kind of treatment plant. Now, not necessarily talking about the full scale one like we have down here, but you can't use a conventional septic system in most of this because it doesn't perk. So, if you want to solve that problem, you've got to provide a sewer, some sort of sewer plant for it.
And so the people that supply the water for the town doesn't do sewer also?
No.
It's all been private sewer the entire time. And I've got one staff member that said, be really careful with that. If you start tugging on the sewer issue, sooner or later somebody's going to say, you have to fix it. Well, nothing will ever improve in Columbia until the sewer problem is solved, because no developer, no home builder ever is going to put in something when you've got raw sewage bubbling out of the ground, and that's exactly what is happening. I can't even get the health department to tell us where it's coming from because they don't really want to snake the stuff. I said, okay, fine, we'll use ARCA and we'll run the snake to it. But now we have to get VDOT approval because it's really close to the highway, and my fuzzy folks can't dig near the highway except in their district, because that's where they have legal authority to, so we have to get a special exception for them to do it there. Once we run through it, they can find an intact pipe, we can run a snake through it with our sensors on and find out what direction it's coming from. What if it's coming from the house across the street that's owned by someone who's a good resident, and that's in quotes, because I don't want to make the value judgment between good and bad, but it's likely coming from something across the street, and there are two rentals and one owned in between the two. And nothing's going to get fixed in Columbia until somebody has the wherewithal and the intestinal fortitude to take on really difficult issues.
Well, you know, one thing that
And Mr. Payne has vastly more experience at ordinance enforcement and these things than I do, so just because I'm not agreeing with everything he says and I want to do something doesn't mean he's not right. So
the one thing you need to contemplate is the truly apocalyptic response, and that is Columbia simply goes away. That it's not suited for modern living with the resources that we have available.
So especially down on the main road. Yes.
If the people, well, I may have told you this before, but there was in my research when the town was going away, I found a petition relating to this area down by the river, where the landowners petitioned the General Assembly to delete that area from the town. And the reason they did, and this was, I think it was before 1830, it was around 1820 as I recall, what they said was the statute establishing the town requires you to when you acquire a lot, you have a certain amount of time in which to improve it, so you build a house on it. And what they were saying is, we can't build a house on it because it's subject to flooding. Surprise, surprise. And so they said, take it out of the town so we can just use it for cropland. Now, that's how old this problem is. And the answer to that was, you don't see any development down there, do you?
Because money that was there washed away in one of the many floods.
Yes. Well, it just didn't get there.
And after decades, the structures that finally got torn down recently, the only reason they were torn down is because they had been languishing for decades so badly that they finally started falling apart and falling over and being you know, unsafe and therefore uninhabitable decades ago. And now that they've kind of gone that far, we finally got a federal FEMA grant to tear those down. Now the space has to say green space in perpetuity, but at least those four blighted structures are gone. But the only reason they got torn down is because they were uninhabited and uninhabitable and had been in the floodplain and deteriorating for decades.
But remember,
for 100 years,
this is not the first rodeo with this. Because, as a little historical tidbit I gave you before, was the same problem.
So
what the town did was ordered the buildings torn down, and they tore them down.
And then there was real devastation in 1969.
And 72?
With the flood.
No, I'm talking about the result of that. I'm talking about probably, you know, I'm just guessing, probably 1980. When the town adopted that ordinance, it enforced it. And there were, I don't remember how many buildings there were, but there were several buildings that they actually enforced. And the landlord, and I won't mention any names, but he's still there, the landlord didn't obey the order to secure them, tear them down, so the town tore them down. And they charged the landlord with the cost of it, and the landlord had to end up paying it.
And those are the kind of things that I'm concerned about. And I hear you when you say it has to be, something has to be done. That's clear. And I know no one in this room can answer that now. That happens. You got sewer issue. You got things bigger than the 11 people who are going to be living there. And is the county going to be prepared to, I don't know what something like that cost, and those negotiations with who's ever on the other side of that borderline? Because starting the process and being able to snake to this point, and you still need to get over here, and nobody's going to let you, we've disrupted everything around just to be stopped. And I just kind of sort of seeing what, I don't know, maybe the board of supervisors are talking about, if, you know, they get a recommendation from this board, we don't have finalization, but a recommendation from this board, yes or no, are the next people who are making those kinds of decisions ready to make that big leap of something that we've been
doing? Part of the problem is you can't answer that because you can't answer for a future board. And so, and we can't obligate a future board to do X, Y, or Z. I mean, if you have an existing contract, yes. But you can't expect the future board, this board, to say, well, the future board is going to do what we did. There's no way to guarantee that. But if the structures are found to be not reasonably habitable under the rental inspection district ordinance, and the landlord is required to make improvements to bring them up to code, and can't do improvements to bring them up to code because the amount of improvements that would need to be done would make it require building to floodplain code, and therefore they are no longer viable rental units, and those tenants are moved out of the facilities in whatever, you know, the sequence or manner it is, and somebody's going to have to work on trying to help these human beings find some other place to live. Some will just disappear, and they won't be a problem at all. Some will definitely need a handheld, and we can try to help. But once those structures are no longer viable rental properties and no longer viable remodeled properties that can be remodeled to a reasonable standard, they will no longer be valuable to anyone, and therefore that owner will either want to sell them, or when they start to continue to deteriorate, he's going to get ordered to tear them down. Or maybe they'll be so low value, that the county would buy those properties and tear them down because it's a better public health issue than just letting them sit there. All those possibilities are there. But it's the viability of those places as rentals. I would be glad, happy indeed, if we found they're not so bad inside, or whatever rental district we put in, if the place we think is a problem, we find it's not so much a problem, it only has three things that need to be fixed. This needs to be fixed, and this, and they get fixed, then now you've got a safe place for people to live. So we should have less concern about it in the future. Tenant-landlord relations on whether you're paying cash or you're trading favors or whatever, I can't solve all the problems of the world, but right now I know there's raw sewage in some of those buildings. I know there's electrical wiring problems in some of those buildings. I know there's sewage problems all around the buildings. I just know those things because we've seen them. People have gone in and seen them.
It's in the street.
Right next to the street, there's sewer bubbling up.
Yeah.
On the north side of the street, there's sewage. And on the south side below, on the lower side, there's sewage. And that's just the stuff we can obviously see. There's lots more, I'm sure.
Mr. Robinson, have we, in researching this, have we looked into any other counties or places that have this into effect?
We haven't. Oh, well, I'd go very far. The city of Charlottesville has it.
Have we tried to study how effective it was and the problems?
We're in a unique position. Like I said, we're a rural county, but we have an unincorporated town. Most of the localities that have this district are urban. Urban counties or urban cities. So you're not going to find rental inspection districts generally in Southside rural counties or Central Virginia rural counties.
And Mr. Robinson and Mr. Zimmer, both of y'all are on this task force, right?
And Mr. Nichols.
I know that.
And Ms. Steele comes all the time now, too. She had nothing
exciting.
Better to do on Monday.
Yeah, exciting Monday night.
y'all have seen the problem that exists.
And Ms. Seeger has been, too. She's been to the task force meetings and the work days down there.
Well worked.
Okay. Now, to my question. Y'all have seen the problem. Do y'all think that this would be an effective tool to help solve the problem?
To help make headway in this decades or centuries long intransigent problem? Yes, I do. I think it's one thing, and, you know, the talk you gave earlier about there's always one more question. Those are the things I call the 1% problems. Mm-hmm. This could work towards solving 80% problems. That's a win. We're not going to solve 100% of those problems. We're not going to solve, there are many, many problems, you know, that we're not going to solve. I mean, where that sewage is coming from.
And, oh, by the way, if we have this as a big discussion and an open board work session some night, boy, there might be some press coverage of that. And that press coverage might get around, and the people that are probably causing the problem might see that, oh, the board's heading down that road.
any little bit of pressure may be useful.
Can we...
And I think, I will add that I believe that a majority of the members of that task force would strongly support this action.
Can we recommend that the board look at this proposal of a rental inspection district and give some feedback? I don't know how to really word this and stuff like that, but my concern is the health, safety, and welfare of the people that are living in these conditions. I think we're going to come to a situation where somebody's going to die and we didn't do anything. That's just my...
But there's codes out there to deal with these types of buildings already. Like 15.2906 says if you declare it a public health hazard, the county has the authority to declare a public health hazard and tear it down. We used it in Southwood. That's how we got Southwood cleaned up. We got DEQ involved.
That's how
we got open sewerage. Any open sewage that threatens a waterway is a DEQ violation.
That's why we met with DEQ and why we met with Thomas Jefferson Soil and Water Conservation District, why we met with CIRCAP and why we met with the local health department. I haven't seen a solution yet, but we're working hard on it. But that doesn't solve the problem of the people that live in inadequate housing and inadequate rental housing.
I guess my question is, if we go this route and then the place is vacated, are we prepared to tear it down?
We don't have to tear it down. It doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the owner.
Well, that's not necessarily true, because if it violates that ordinance,
right,
we can order it tearing down, and if it doesn't, we can tear it down and charge it.
I'm not suggesting we can't. I'm just saying, that are we prepared to tear it down? No, we're not prepared to tear it down. Are we prepared to order someone else to tear it down if it's required to be torn down? Of course. That's what part of the ordinance would be. Now, that's a board decision, but yes.
So
It's still a public health hazard if it's a derelict building, because once it's vacant, it's a derelict building.
It's not vacant. They're all inhabited.
Right.
It's vacant.
But if we go to this rental inspection district, the landlord decides not to fix it, so now you've got these four buildings that are vacant, what happens to those buildings as they become derelict?
Make them go away.
At the end of the day, if you really want to fix this problem, you've got two choices. Either you bring everything up to a decent standard for people to live in,
right,
and somebody's going to have to pay for that, whether it's the county or anybody else. But the money is not the only problem. The problem is with this situated as it is physically, there's only so much you can do. Because a lot of them are affected by the floodplain, and it may not be in the floodplain, but they're affected by it to the point where you can't lawfully make the repairs that you need to make, or you can't get financing to do it. And that's what, you know, the whole thing going back to 1969, when we had the first of the big floods, and the federal flood insurance came in, the federal flood insurance has caused a lot of unintended consequences. I had somebody call me the other day in Albemarle County with a house that was primarily out of the floodplain with one room that was in the floodplain, and it was flooded in one of these recent freshets, and it was clearly dangerous to occupy. The county will not, Albemarle County, will not allow them to remove the bad room and store the good room. So that's the kind of difficulty you get into. The sewer problem is of a piece with that. If you want to stop sewer running in the streets, you provide an alternative. There is no obvious alternative, because the conventional system simply won't work. There are alternative systems, but they tend to be very expensive and maintenance intensive. These problems can be solved, but Scottsville did it. But Scottsville and Columbia were sisters, essentially. But Scottsville Scottsville, largely because of one man's efforts, got the money to make huge changes that allowed them to get a civil, let's say a civilized standard of housing and other occupancy. That hasn't happened in Columbia. But that's, at the end of the day, that's what you're talking about. Either the town goes away, and anybody that in this room that's been to Jamestown knows that that can happen. Either the town goes away altogether, or pretty much altogether, or you put a lot of money into it. And at the end of the day, that's the only two alternatives you've got. You can make incremental steps, and I'm not saying you shouldn't, if you think that's appropriate, shouldn't do that. But don't think you're solving the problem. You're just ameliorating it.
The point of my comments was, if we do this, and then we have these buildings sitting vacant and they're falling down, are we making the problem worse? Because those buildings are still there.
Well, now, the ordinance you mentioned, they use in Southwood there in Charlottesville, and I know what that is, something like that. Have we tried using that ordinance?
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly where we're focused. And Southwood was a the example of Southwood is one of the ones we're using to inform us on this. If, for instance, these five facilities all got vacated because they were found to be not in compliance with the rental inspection district rules and regulations, and the owner could not or would not bring them up to standards, and the people were moved out, other housing found, and they stood empty and started deteriorating, that would be fantastic. Because okay. Then we've got another way to enforce getting them removed.
We're going to have to wrap this up because we only got about 3 or 4 minutes left. I'm going to make a suggestion that we bring this back up at our next work session, try to find more information about it, come up with type of solution. I mean, I'm in favor of this, but and I see so many questions, and I think we're going to have questions, like Mr. Zimmer said, forever. I mean, you were going to have somebody that's going to say, well, you did this or you didn't do that or whatever like that. But I think we need to look into it a little bit further, and I think we had some more discussion. But
Mr. Payne, as far as our recommendation to the Board of Supervisors, what would be the process for the Planning Commission to do that, or would they?
Whatever you think. This is not, you do not have a statutory requirement. It's not like a zoning ordinance. You don't have to make a recommendation.
See, I'd like to make a recommendation that we have the Board of Supervisors look at. But I can't really make
the idea is that they, I don't know if the Board has really done anything affirmatively to ask for it, but I think what the suggestion here is you tell them what you think, whether you think an ordinance is effective or whether we simply enforce the ordinance we have more rigorously, or whether we try to encourage removals, removal of the problem through other means, allow people to move to better housing by themselves. That's, I think, what the Board is looking for.
And I agree with Mr. Bibb. You know, it's a real serious, but I also believe that we don't need to talk about it forever. Like, you know, having that concrete information of what we can know, the 30,000 questions that'll keep coming, we have to be ready to own whatever decision that we make in terms of recommendation. But just being able to have the final pieces of anything that would help us all make whatever that recommendation would be, I would just say I don't think we need.
So as a staff, we'll come back with more information. We have a formal boundary. The former town of Columbia minus the area next to the river, and we have an ordinance. So we'll try to tie up these loose ends, and then.
Well, that's the easy part. If you want to do it, use that
right. If you want to do it. So we'll also check a number of surrounding or central Virginia rural counties to find out if they have rental inspection districts designated in their code and what their experience has been with them. So we can bring that back to you.
That would be great. Yep. We could talk about it one more time, but yep. I agree.
Sure.
It's key that we need to make a decision.
Mr. Chairman, one more thing before we move to the regular meeting. I suggest we move small cell telecommunications until after our public hearing to unfinished business.
Okay.
ask. So you're going to talk about it more, or are you going to put it on the
public
hearing and talk about it then and decide?
Would it be a public hearing?
Well,
for the board.
No, I'm talking about for us.
No, I think what I heard Mr. Bibb say was set it on a future work session. And I think that's perfect.
But make a recommendation. Do we have to have a public hearing?
No.
That's what I meant.
This is not statutorily required.
What we're going to move to after the public hearing is about this small cell telecommunication, not this item. We didn't get to that in the work session, so we're going to add that on to the after the work session. I mean, after the...
The Columbia, we're going to push to January.
January. Or
we'll bring some information back at that time.
Okay. So we've ended our work session, and at this time, it is 7 o'clock. We will come to order with our regular Blue Valley County Planning Commission meeting for December 11th, 2018. First order of business is the Pledge of Allegiance and a moment of silence. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. The next item on the agenda is the director's report.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any board actions or BZA actions to report at this time.
Okay. Next on the agenda is the first of two public comment sections for tonight. Anyone wishing to come make any comments about anything other than the public hearing tonight, you will be able to speak about at the public hearing about the capital improvement plan at that time. Anyone wishing to come forward at this time, come forward to the podium, state your name and address. You'll be limited 3 minutes. Seeing no one coming forward, we will end our first public comment section for the night. And we'll go to the minutes of the November 13th, 2018 meeting. Does anybody have any comments, any changes, or a motion about the minutes from our...
Make a motion to be approved.
Okay, I have a motion to be approved from Mr. Johnson. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Zimmer. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0. Now we will be going into our public hearing on the capital improvements plan for years 2020 through 2024.
Okay, so this year's capital improvement plan included the submittal of 58 projects by county departments. The amount of all those projects came to over $36 million, which over $5 million is proposed for fiscal year 2020. As you recall from the previous work session, the Planning Commission varied away from the previous ranking system, and this year it selected 10 projects that were determined to be top priorities. So on the screen you have the first five. Two from schools, one from public works, one from the sheriff, and one from fire and rescue. And on the next slide, the remaining five, again, two more from fire and rescue, two from schools, and one from the sheriff. And then this screen just shows all 10 projects listed together in order from number 1 to 10. So that completes staff's presentation. We haven't received any public comment on this proposal.
Okay, we had changed our ranking system at our last meeting. We rated the top 10 items in the ranking 1 to 10. We decided which was the most needed, number one through number 10. We had recently, before that, always ranked whether they were ones, twos, threes, fours, whatever. And we had quite a bit of discussion about these projects. Do we, at this time, want to go forward and recommend to send that recommendation and that ranking to the Board of Supervisors? Now, well, I think we need to have a little bit of discussion about that, and then I'll have to open up the public hearing before we actually vote on that. But I just wanted to go over what we had done recently in the past. Although in my own things, I wish we actually had a real five-year plan. I don't really see some of these things that have been on this thing get moved around and been on for 10 years. End of this month, I'll be on the Planning Commission 11 years, and I've seen these same things for 10 years and so forth. So sometimes I think we need to have an actual budget and figure out how much each item's going to cost, when it can be done, and how they're going to finance it and so forth, and have a real five-year plan. But that's my personal opinion.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask, do you remember what this totaled up to? What the total dollars of these 10 that we ranked?
It's about 3 million.
3.5, wasn't it? So between 3 and 3.5.
Right. Which, if I remember, was a number that Mr. Nichols also floated as a reasonable recommendation of amount of money that might reasonably be approved. I think that's kind of where we stopped, where we did, when we got around that area. So
this is where we're at this time, and if there's no objection, I will open up the public hearing on this matter at this time, and anyone from the public wishing to come forward and speak on this can come forward and state your concern or agreement or so forth. So at this time, we will open the public hearing. Seeing no one come forward, we'll close the public hearing and have more discussion. I see quite a few of the people from a different department here tonight. they've been here in the past and so forth like that. Under the recommendation of Mr. Nichols, the county administrator, we rank these from 1 to 10 because under him telling us that all of the projects that are in there could not be funded this coming year, so therefore we did that. Does anybody want to make any comments about that?
Question: the $36,837,370, was that for all the capital improvements or just the ones that were asked for this year?
I believe that was the amount of all the ones that were requested for this year.
Okay.
Did that include the administration building, or do you remember? Because that was sort of put in as a placeholder
this year.
That was the 5-year plan. That was the 5-year plan. It was $36 million.
Which would include the
$11 million.
$10 or $11 million.
So we were in for $5 million. $5.5 million. What was requested for this year.
Is there any other questions? Do we have any other questions for the department people, or Mr. Nichols, or before we have a vote or recommendation?
Yes.
A motion?
I do. For the school system, because we have them ranked number 10 for the computer instructional technology.
Yes.
But if I understood correctly, those licenses they expire this coming year.
Some of them do, but this money, these monies would go towards replacing the current, and I don't have all the technological references that Mr. Gifford did, but these would help with our routers and we need two more stations within our technology department.
Okay.
And the majorities of those monies would go to there. I want to say 250. The other 50 would start that process with our Chromebooks. We have to get rid of some of them, but that would help.
Okay. Because when we look at this 1 through 10, and you see the information about where we put school in order, my question would be, and this would go to also to the Sheriff's Department, your three for the school, do we have them in the wrong order? Like in terms of the four for the schools, where like buses may be at 10 and
computer. This is what we decided at our last meeting. I mean, this was a decision made by the entire planning commission.
Yes, sir.
So that is the order that we decide.
Yes, sir.
We've already ranked.
Yes, sir. I understand, but you asked if there are any other questions, and that's a question I would want to ask the school and the sheriff.
Could you ask her whether they should be in a different place?
Yes, and that's for a personal knowledge.
Since you're asking, should be in a different order based on the school, so if they decided the buses were more important than the capital reserve fund, that would move up to 1, and 1 would move down to where the buses are.
Yes.
That's
what I'm asking, because we've already ranked what we said is the top 10 out of the 58. But before we vote on this, I would want to be clear that we've captured what we as this board thinks is important. But still, if, for whatever reason, if the Board of Supervisors don't take all that's on that list, I still would want to know what would be your order.
I went back and I followed up with the departments. Those are in good order. Those are in good order.
All we're doing actually is making a recommendation.
I mean, that was a good question for them.
The toss-up between buses and computer technology, obviously, we'd want them all at 1, 2, 3, and 4.
Mm-hmm.
But those are in good order for right
now. But we purposely didn't ask you if you wanted yours ahead of the sheriff, because we didn't
want to. I know that. I wanted to put that in there because I want to make sure you got home.
You slept at home tonight.
Yes.
Right.
Protected you from yourself.
The problem is we don't really know what the Board of Supervisors, what type of budget that they're looking at.
Yes, sir.
We don't have any idea how much funding that they will have. Of course, when you talk about school buses, we need to make sure that we have safe school buses for our children to ride. So as far as I'm concerned, that would always have to come before, like, computer instructional technology and infrastructure replacement. And y'all all know that I don't think that should be on it at all. I think it should be part of the school's budget.
I knew that was coming up. I knew that.
Well, and part of my reasoning for asking, it's one thing, and I've only been on this board since July, but if we're supposed to be a part of the county and a part of the people that we serve, it's clear to understand if we're gauging what we're hearing. And for me, that is important, and also for the Sheriff's Department, because for future references, me knowing when you are saying we need this, and we're required to make a recommendation, I would want to gauge if we're getting, or at least me, if I'm getting what you've been trying to convey to me up here through everybody, and not just the sheriffs or not just the schools, but, you know, we're still talking about monies.
My hope is that, if I read this correctly, is that our original submission and request was for $600,000 for buses. I think that's going down to $300,000 from you guys. And with that other $300,000, I'm hoping that the Board of Supervisors will see that and approve all 1 through 10. That is our hope. And then that way we can divide and conquer and hit all the areas, those top four that we really need.
As for the Sheriff's Office, when it comes to vehicles for us and the comparison of the courthouse security upgrades, we have to have a functional fleet to be able to continue to do our call for service in the community. And for us, it's never been a need, and it's always been stressed to us that it should not be a need for us to lobby for having those kinds of essential things like the vehicles, that we would never want to rank anything any different other than them being a priority and that some other things could be a part of our priority. That's why this year we presented the courthouse security upgrades as well as the sheriff's vehicles. If you'll note in our previous funding, we've always had level funding at least $125,000, but we noticed a few years ago that that was inadequate and that we needed to have more to be able to refresh our fleet more consistently and not have to worry about whether we're going to have good vehicles to get out and get calls answered in. At this point, we have requested an additional $93,000, which is in this year's request, which brings the total request for this year and outlying years to $218,000. That would account for new vehicles, new equipment. What we've done in the past is we've been able to take older vehicles and take reusable equipment and take that equipment and put it in the newer vehicles. Of course, as designs would go with vehicles, today about every 5 years, there's some major design changes in vehicles. And the current vehicles that we're replacing now requires to put in new cages, new consoles, new brush guards, those kinds of things, which in the older vehicles, we didn't have to do that for a while. Once we've got that particular model and make and model, we're able to fluidly transfer some of that stuff along the way. But, of course, the designs are changing, and it costs more to outfit the vehicle. And so to do that, as well as get the additional vehicles that we need to keep to remain consistent with outfitting our staff, we have to have the funding for vehicles that we ask for. The courthouse security upgrades is a very important thing for us. That's another one of our codified expectations of the Office of the Sheriff, is to still run and protect the court. And to be able to protect the court the way we need to, the things that we have put in there, would, the money that we put in there would allow us to give the appropriate security that we need to the courts and provide for more efficiency with our staff at the courthouse. As I stated in the request, currently if we have someone who is under arrest, a prisoner, who needs to be processed and submitted to the state police and FBI, we have to physically load that person in a vehicle, take them from the courthouse, transport them to the sheriff's office, put them in the holding cell there, bring up our equipment, do all the processing that we need there, put them back in the car, take them back to the courthouse. And these are people who may have a whole lot less to lose. And so the risk is a whole lot higher with these folks as it would be with someone who were just arrested on the street. And so it takes more staff to accomplish that. So the security upgrades that we put in for would allow us the ability to do those things, minimize the amount of cost and time it takes to get that done, and make for a whole lot more efficient process along the way.
So do you think that we have those in the right order, 4 and 7?
I think that for us, we would always put our vehicles at the highest. Remember, even with the courthouse security problem that we have, we're using the vehicles to get them back and forth. And so we would put the vehicles, we would probably say our vehicles would be a higher ranking than our courthouse, but we truly feel that both of them are, would garner the same amount of attention and ranking.
And for fire and rescue?
Yeah, I don't really disagree too much with the order you've got them in here, but like Captain Hill says, that the SCBA replacement, we don't have a choice. That's got to be done. They're at end of life, and for our firefighters to do what they need to do, that's a tool that they have to have. We just went through a funeral today, or this weekend, with a firefighter who died of occupational cancer. This is designed to help protect them. It's nothing is foolproof, but it helps. The heart monitor replacements, we're facing the same issue there. They're coming up to end of life. We're starting the process now. As I mentioned to you earlier, we didn't have a good handle on what those replacements would be, but in November, Phillips showed prototypes of their new and it looks really good. And so there's a pretty good chance we'll go that way. We'll be comparing the various models, but there's a pretty good chance we'll go that way. I would like to, so the bulk of that money will be a little bit down the road because it's not, we still have a little time on that. And we will be applying for grants to offset some of that funding. So, you know, we no guarantees on the grants, but it is something we'll be actively working toward, as we are with the SCBA upgrades. And like Captain Hill said, we need the trucks to be able to run the call. So the vehicle replacement, some of these trucks are, they're getting extremely old. Technology has gotten better. Safety systems have gotten better. So we need those as well. So I don't disagree with any of the order, but I think they're all high priorities. That's why we put them there.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I just, that's what I wanted to see, is that what we heard, we put them in a ranking that the Board of Supervisors, however time they needed to spend on that, we made those decisions based on their feedback and our research, and it was reflective of what would be best for these departments. That's all I have to say.
You know, the thing is, I'd like to have added a lot more onto this. There's a lot of things that we could have ranked number one, but we also, in consultation with the county administrator, realized that there's only going to be so much money available. The fact is, in making the budget, they have to consider what funds are available, what funds that they know are coming in, and what the citizens of the county can afford to pay. I mean, you have to consider the poor people in the county, the people on the fixed income. How much taxes are they going to be able to absorb? We'd like to do everything on this list, but at times you can't always do that. Any other questions? Do I have a motion?
I move the Planning Commission recommend approval of the FY 2024 Capital Improvement Plan CIP as presented with a list of funding priorities prepared by the Planning Commission.
I have a motion by Ms. Mary Key. Do I have a second?
Second.
I have a second from Mr. Zimmer. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye, 5-0.
Mr. Chair, I'd just like to say thank you to the Planning Commission because this is an iterative process every year. It tweaks a little bit. You've been very patient with that process, but this really, I think, will help the board a great deal by you having this vetted discussion and getting to the top of the list, because there's no way we can fund the entire list in any one year normally. And this, I think this is really useful for the board. So thank you very much.
Okay. We have ended the public hearing, and an item that we'd actually really had on our work session, we're going to move to that item, added that onto a regular meeting schedule. It is small cell telecommunications discussion.
I am not quite as contentious as Columbia, but equally as exciting. So small cell telecommunications, completely foreign to some of y'all. It was to me about a month ago. So I'll try to explain it and answer any questions you guys have. All right, so the Code of Virginia definition of a small cell facility is a wireless facility that needs both of the following qualifications. Each antenna is located inside an enclosure of no more than 6 cubic feet in volume, or in the case of an antenna that has exposed elements, the antenna and all of its exposed elements could fit within an imaginary enclosure of no more than 6 cubic feet, and all other wireless equipment associated with the facility has a cumulative volume of no more than 28 cubic feet, or such higher limit as is established by the FCC. Get down to the nitty-gritty of that. Each individual piece on a small cell cannot be greater than 6 cubic feet, and all the equipment total cannot be more than 28 cubic feet. It's the brunt of what that's saying.
that's...
And that picture next to it is just an example of one. I put one each slide so y'all can see the different ways it might show up throughout the community.
That applies to Fendo cells, Pico cells, and Micro cells.
Yes, yep, they're all interchangeably, yes, yep. And you'll see that on another graphic as well.
The macro cell is 20 miles, but the others are smaller areas.
Yep. Okay, so in 2017, there was House Bill 1282, zoning for wireless communication structures. That resulted in a change to Virginia State Code, and I hit the high points of it, but I also printed out copies of the new one if y'all just get bored and want to look at the Virginia State Code. You can take one and pass it, I think, for all of you guys. But the high points of that... or that localities can't require an SUP or variance for small cell facilities installed on existing structures, as long as they have permission from the structure owner and notify the locality. However, as you'll see on the handout I just gave you, we can require administrative review of the permit and can require some fees. The limits to those fees are also on the handout that I gave you. You can go to the next one. Alright. So the purpose of adopting this was so we would be in compliance with the new Code of Virginia specific to small cell telecommunications. Currently, we already have regulations of telecommunications, but no specific to small cell. So that's the one piece we're missing. It is relatively new technology, but it's going to be coming up more often, so we might as well go ahead and get ahead of the curve.
Did this, some of this come about because of the backhaul problems that some of these telecommunications people have had, taken up to 2 years to get the permitting process?
That can be. And also the small cells, this kind of communication helps expand our capacity. So coverage, Brad and I were in a meeting this week with some, well, last week with some guys from a tower company. So small cells will actually help with our capacity as opposed to our coverage. We're not struggling as much with coverage. But as the county grows and we get more people, capacity is going to become an issue. So small cells will become popular and need that capacity. So Dinwiddie County, Jason, were you there when they did this or did they already?
No, this was my successor.
That's right. So they did this and have that too. Again, if you just want to read it for fun. This is what Dinwiddie did, and this is similar to what we could do here.
And this ordinance was vetted by our current consultant, the Lands Group. They work with Dinwiddie County as well, so we're not wanting to reinvent the wheel. We were taking a look at what somebody else has done and trying to adapt it to potentially right. adapt it to our section of ordinance.
Right, and you'll see that a lot of what Dinwiddie put into theirs, like Jason was saying, it's not brand new. They use the same language that was in the Code of Virginia, which is really what we could do. You can go to the last slide. Oh, actually, go back. I want to point out the graphic. So, Mr. Wood, this is exactly what you were talking about. So you'd have the big macro cell, and then you could put the small cell on anything like a street lamp or a stoplight.
I noticed that, like, the... Fendo cells covers an area about 10 meters, basically used for businesses or even homes. And then the Pico cells covers like 200 meters and for larger indoor areas like a mall or a train station or an office building or something like that. And then the micro cell will cover up to 2 kilometers.
Yes, so if we wanted to do this, we could do it in a similar way that Dinwiddie did, which is just using the language that's already set forth in the Code of Virginia. We would need to add some more definitions. This wouldn't go against anything we already have. It would just be an addition to what we already have. But I think this is going to start coming up more, so it's important that we go ahead and start.
I think the bottom line is we want to expand on our existing ordinance and have
right.
new technologies out there. Mm-hmm. Be in compliance with state code.
is this addressing any specific issue, or you just guys are
this is
looking down the road?
We haven't had any specific requests.
Okay.
It's more just we're routinely updating our ordinance.
Housekeeping.
And this would be
a great idea.
This would be an administrative decision. It would not have to come before us, according to the way I'm looking
Correct.
At the state statute.
Right, exactly. Because it would require the special use permit, so it would be something that we just do.
I noticed that reading about it, that some of the things that people have had is sometimes public buildings and stuff like that, that they work with the just system, whether it's legal or whatever. So I think that this ordinance is kind of, the state had kind of come to agreement to get more sales available.
So we just wanted to make you all aware that this issue is coming. We're going to work with Mr. Payne's office, our consultant, and get you all, come back with something more formal, get you all to make the recommendation to the Board of Supervisors.
Does this address the issue of accessibility to the parts of the county where it's limited, like people don't?
It potentially could, but I think the big thing with these is they do work in conjunction with the larger towers. So if there's a lack of larger towers, these aren't really going to be an option.
Okay.
So
it really, wouldn't do what you're talking about.
Oh, okay.
It wouldn't. Right.
It's more an infill of existing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's refining the areas that are
the macro cell will cover about 20 miles, but these are for smaller areas.
Okay.
And they also work somewhat in conjunction with these micro cells.
Yeah, and this would kind of pop up in a place where you're seeing a large density of people, which they would likely already have coverage and service anyways.
Is that something they probably use in Charlottesville where they have wireless service throughout the whole city?
Likely so, because these are more popular in urban areas. I think that's why we haven't seen it as much quite yet, because we're still struggling with the coverage.
I doubt that you've got, I don't know of anything in the city that's used. Cell service in the city of Charlottesville is surprisingly poor.
Yes.
So I doubt that they have much of this. My guess is a lot of this is more nearly private. So if you've got a, you know, say you've got an industrial campus, you can put one of these up to improve the service within your campus. And you saw the numbers on there, 50 to 500 meters in much.
Back some years ago when I was on a commission committee in the county, and we had a big meeting at the library about cell service and cell towers and so forth like that. There was even a development at the time of a little square cell box that you could put in each individual house. And I never heard any more about that, but I'd have to look up the name of the company. But they were experimenting in from foreign countries.
They have boosters. They have cell boosters. We have those now in high school.
Yeah,
that's how we get the radio signals from outside and cell signals. Sometimes you walk in the building and you've got four bars on your wireless cell service. Sometimes you only got two bars. It's because they've got wireless expanders to bring the set signal in.
But they all they're dependent on getting a signal from the tower. Some can't move by zero.
That's the problem with cell. These are much more for urban areas than for network.
Still get zero.
Or large rural areas.
Okay. After consulting with us, the pain and so forth, that's going to be brought back to us.
Correct.
For recommendation.
And what you do, the procedure you have to do is you have to, either you or the board, presumably you, would initiate a change, and then you have the formal ordinance prepared and subjected to public hearings, amend the code in due course.
This was just information on the advise you about what we're contemplating to bring our ordinances in compliance with.
Unlike the last ordinance we were talking about, which is not really related to the zoning. This is a change to the zoning.
This is zoning ordinance.
This would be our normal.
You have a statutory duty with respect to this.
Okay. Got it.
Is there any more discussion or any more information that you want to supply for us tonight? If that's the end of that discussion, I will, at this time, bring the second of two public comment sections. Anyone wishing to come forward to make any comment about anything about the county, please come forward, state your name and address. Since there's no one coming forward, we'll end the public comment section. There's no other business to take care of tonight. We will adjourn at 7:37.